isn't home where we all want to be? Reba here for Realtor.com, the pros' number one most trusted app. Finding a home is like dating. You're searching for the one. With over 500,000 new listings every month, you could find the one today. Download the Realtor.com app because you're nearly home. Make it real with Realtor.com.
Pros number one most trusted app based on August 2024 proprietary survey. Over 500,000 new listings every month based on average new for sale and rental listings. February 2024 through January 2025.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, September 26th. I'm Katie Dayton for The Wall Street Journal. Today, two tales in innovation. When it works and when it breaks down. We venture deep into the cornfields of Ohio to explore what's happening to Intel's planned $28 billion semiconductor factory project, which was supposed to open this year. Then we lift the lid on Google's so-called Moonshot factory and its unique approach to corporate failure. But first, in 2022, when Intel announced it would be building a semiconductor factory site in the heart of Ohio, locals were largely optimistic about the promised economic boom. But 3 years later, some people there are concerned they're just going to be left with gaping holes in the ground. Intel has delayed the project twice, announced workforce cuts of around 30%, and said that the first factory now won't open until 2030 at the earliest. WSJ reporter Chris Maher went on the ground to find out more. So, Chris, this story centers on the town of New Albany, Ohio, which you visited in your reporting. Can you paint us a picture of what it's like there?
New Albany is a really interesting place. It was planned largely. So it's very organized. It's affluent. It's maybe just about 20 minutes outside of Columbus, Ohio, the Ohio State Capitol. And New Albany has a lot of Georgian architecture, beautiful shops and things. It also is one of the country's biggest data center hubs. And it also became the site of Intel's very large investment in a semiconductor factory. When you're driving around the area, I would be down a one-lane country road, and then all of a sudden I'm at this massive data center complex. So it's really transforming this region, and it's going through some growing pains. And so that's affecting people that live there right now, too.
Going back, when and how did Intel's relationship with the town begin?
The Intel Fabs project in New Albany was announced in early 2022. There was a lot of fanfare. It was a big win, a coup for the state of Ohio and Governor Mike DeWine. And the CEO of Intel at the time said this was going to transform the Rust Belt into the Silicon Heartland. There was so much optimism and enthusiasm initially.
What was this community led to expect? You know, aside from the plant itself, what else had they been promised?
Initially, the investment was going to be $20 billion. That was increased to $28 billion. And the CEO of Intel at the time said that, you know, it could even increase to $100 billion. In terms of jobs, the project was going to create about 7,000 construction jobs and about 3,000 full-time jobs once the factories were completed.
So some big investment there. What happened?
So the project has been delayed several times. The start date was supposed to be this year in 2025. But after a couple of delays, it's now projected that the first of two factories would open in 2030. So 5-year delay. That's at the earliest. The other factory on site would open a little bit after that. And even just in recently in July, the CEO of the company now said that they were going to slow construction again. So the project is still moving along, but right now there's about 1,000 construction workers on site.
What were some of the reasons that Intel gave for delaying this project?
The company has come under a lot of pressure in terms of competing with other chip manufacturers. When I talked to people locally, they were saying, you know, this is the biggest project in our state's history, but it's also one where the company doesn't really have a clear customer at this point and, you know, exactly know which product it's going to be making. So Intel lately has been saying that they're going to adjust their plans for the customer demand and see how the market develops.
And Ohio itself also invested in this project. How have politicians reacted to what's been happening?
At the state level, there's been a lot of, I'd say, maybe consternation. There was a state senator who called for a fraud investigation, because Ohio has provided a lot of financial incentives that total about $2 billion. And that includes about $691 million just in infrastructure improvements. And I'll say when I was there, you can clearly see that roads have been widened, the highways have been expanded, there's miles of storm pipes and wastewater treatment plants, all the things you would expect, but costs hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's really been disruptive and a bit of an economic hardship for people there.
That was WSJ reporter Chris Maher. Coming up, we lift the lid on X. No, not that one, the Google one. That's after the break.
Boardrooms love buzzwords. AI, climate, resilience.
But what do they actually mean for CFOs and execs trying to survive the next earnings call?
That's where the pre-read comes in.
Real experts and real talk.
Subscribe to the pre-read, presented by Workiva.
X, the Google division known as its Moonshot Factory, is one of the Alphabet company's most elusive divisions, paving the way for tech breakthroughs like Waymo. The WSJ Leadership Institute's Wendy Bounds recently sat down with X's Chief Financial Officer and Chief Operations Officer, Helen Riley, to learn what an innovation mindset really requires. The two spoke at the WSJ Technology Council Summit, and just so you know, they start by referencing a slideshow of projects that X has worked on.
Let's tee up a couple of the projects you all have been working on. Tell us what we're looking at.
Absolutely. So what you're looking at is one of the earliest prototypes of a Waymo car. So what was the problem we were trying to solve with Waymo? There's about a million deaths on the road, on roads every single year. And so our goal was to see whether we could actually take some of the decision making and put it into a computer. And so you look at Waymo now, and I think they've driven 100 million miles on roads to date, and they're serving about 250,000 rides every single week, and we expect that to continue. So I'm super excited. They're already in multiple cities, and we're just going to see much more expansion.
What am I looking at here?
All right. So this is from Wing. So this is our drone delivery service. Essentially, there's a lot of friction in last mile delivery. You know, you've got massive traffic on roads, friction in terms of timing to actually get goods to where you want them to be. And so Wing has launched a delivery service, and they're actually partnering with Walmart, where you can literally get on an app and have goods delivered to your door in a matter of minutes, whether it's like groceries or pharmaceuticals or whatever you may want. And for those of you that remember Hurricane Helene, there were areas where roads were completely inaccessible, and so people really needed baby formula or medical supplies. And so they partnered with Walmart to actually get those supplies delivered.
Pretty amazing. Let's stay in the air here.
Yes, let's stay in the air. So this is from Loon. So this was our communications project. So again, like a third of people around the globe still remain unconnected. And we all know that there are better health outcomes, educational outcomes, economic outcomes when people have connectivity. And so this is a sort of balloon that would fly in the stratosphere and basically be able to beam connectivity between the balloons and then down to the ground. But I think this is an interesting one that we actually included here because even though we were working on the right problem space, connectivity, and even though the technology worked, we couldn't actually get the techno-economics to work.
But this led to the next one we're going to see.
Exactly. So this led to the next one. And this is, by the way, part of our whole philosophy at X, the Moonshot Factory, where even if we try something and it doesn't work in the sort of form that we approach, we don't just throw out what we've learned completely. We'll often go back to the drawing board and take those learnings and see whether they can be reinvented. We essentially call it like moonshot compost. We basically compost the ideas and then see whether a new idea can grow. And so this is an image from a project called Tara, a company now called Tara, which actually just recently spun out of Google X, and they are basically
an engineer from Loon is working on this.
So we had an engineer and some other members of the Loon team. So you're right, it's not even just the IP and the know-how that gets composted. It's also team members that will switch over, which by the way is actually a really important point in terms of inspiring people, because if you're working on a moonshot idea and there's a high probability that it's not going to work out, you want people to still work on it and give it a try. And one of the ways that we can actually inspire people to go for it anyway is if they know that the thing they're working on
has the potential to have a second life. And so that's exactly what happened here. So the team at Tara is now serving communities with sort of high-speed internet in India and in Africa and throughout the Americas as well.
And I want now to take you to pull back because, I mean, everybody's probably thinking innovation at Moonshot, right? Tell us what innovation tactics from Moonshot, from X, can people in this room actually borrow from?
So a reminder, like our focus is really on inspiring radical innovation. And we really want our teams to have an innovation mindset. And so there's a bunch of things that we do to really inspire that way of thinking. I think the best way to think about the Moonshot mindset is through the quote from Thomas Edison that hopefully you're familiar with. I have not failed, I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work. And I think that really gets to the heart of what it truly means to be innovative. He understood that the only way to like achieve the truly audacious is to be brave enough to try and to be willing to make lots of mistakes along the way.
And to not get fired if you do.
And to not get fired. Well, and then that's the key. And so those are some of the practices. And so we're trying to inspire the same with the team, is to have like a humble growth mindset and yet at the same time be really curious and passionate and go after really hard things and be okay facing sort of complete uncertainty about what they do. So one example I would give is, you know, traditionally in companies, you're setting goals and all in sort of incentives and like compensation is tied to did they hit the goal or not exactly as defined. But when you're sort of pursuing radical innovation, you don't even know if the goal that you hit is the right goal to set. And quite frequently, there's a very low probability that the thing you're actually working on is going to work. And so if you only reward hitting the goal, what are people going to do? They're going to lower their ambition. And that's the last thing that we want. So instead, we really focus on how do we reward the learnings and the journey and the fact that they actually tried something difficult.
That was the WSJ Leadership Institute's head of content, Wendy Bounds, interviewing Google X's Helen Riley. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang. I'm your host, Katie Dayton. Additional support this week from Melanie Roy. Jessica Fenton and Michael Laval wrote our theme music. Our development producer is Aisha Al-Muslim. Chris Sinsley is the deputy editor. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back later this morning with TMB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points, perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.